I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. That's where you'll find me giving a safe space to the independent thinkers out there beholden to no party, no politicians. This is Friday. Next hour, we'll do False Flag Friday. The number of lies and misrepresentations around the Ukrainian war are just piling up. And you're not going to see them on the mainstream news from 5:30 to 6 o'clock around here. You are not going to see them, but they are. The news is just bubbling up. This Ukraine thing is one of the biggest scams I've ever seen. It's really amazing what's going on there. So we'll unpack some of that. And I've got some clips from a journalist that was over in Ukraine. And we'll see what the Ukrainian army's up to. This loving democracy that we are shoveling tens of billions of dollars to, as they try to protect their loving democracy. We'll see what the Ukrainian army's been up to. They're just a bunch of thugs. You'll see what I'm talking about next hour, and then we'll finish up this show, as we always do, with This Week on the Crazy Train, as we document the world's descent into total madness. I start most shows when I've got news on it. Take a look at where we are financially these days. Inflation number came back in. I played a clip yesterday of Janet Yellen saying, you know, well, we missed a couple of things here or there. And when I said transitory, I might have, you know, misspoke. And I told you she knew that with all the money printing that she did when she was head of the Federal Reserve, and now that Jerome Powell has done since he's been head of the Federal Reserve, and Ben Bernanke did when he was head of the Federal Reserve, and Alan Greenspan did when he was head of the Federal Reserve, they knew that this money printing ends up in price inflation for the average consumer. And they just did it until it showed up, and now they're pretending that they were just shocked that it was Putin's fault and COVID's fault. But she said that she hoped, in the clip that I played yesterday, I really hope we've seen the worst of it. Well, oops, a day later, inflation accelerated further in May, with prices rising 8.6% from a year ago for the fastest increase since December of 1981, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported Friday. Consumer price index, a wide-ranging measure of goods and services prices, increased even more than the 8.3% Dow Jones estimate. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, so-called CPI, core CPI was up 6%, slightly higher than the 5.9% estimate. Now, I want everybody to remember, and I cannot figure out for the life of me, how nobody in the financial news, not Fox Business, not CNBC, not any kind of reporter out there that's talking about these inflation numbers, they do not calculate inflation now the same way they calculated it back in 1981. To compare those two numbers makes no sense. If we suddenly stopped measuring people in inches here in the United States, where we have rejected the metric system, and started measuring people in centimeters and just reported it as a number of units, somebody that was 72 inches tall is now, I don't know the calculations because Americans didn't learn metric, is now 94 centimeters tall. We wouldn't say that they're taller. It's just a different way of measuring it. And I say that because it is beyond bizarre that nobody in the media mentions this. The inflation for Americans right now is basically double what is reported. If it was calculated the same way it was calculated in 1981, which they reference in this article, and this will be across the spectrum, this is the worst inflation since 1981. If they calculated inflation the same way now that they did in 1981, it would be double this 8.6% number, or somewhere in the 16 to 17 to 18, 19% range. This is bordering on some level of hyperinflation that we're seeing right now. And the fact that nobody will point this out is just absolutely dishonest. And really, the reason they changed the way they calculated inflation back in the 1990s was because they realized it was going to be persistent. The government decided, hey, we're going to keep spending money, and the only way we can keep spending money is if they keep printing money. And this is going to show up as inflation, so we've got to change the way we calculate it so we can convince the people that what they're seeing with their own lying eyes is not really inflation. Pay no attention to what you've been paying for your health care premiums over the years, long before this inflationary spike. Pay no attention to what college costs have been. Pay no attention to what medical costs have been. Pay no attention to the rapidly increasing price of cars and homes over the years. They've been telling you inflation was just 1.2% because they engineered that number so that you wouldn't pay attention. And it worked. It worked swimmingly. So inflation is actually still rising, but it is rising at double the rate that they're reporting, at least in comparison to the 1981 numbers and the way they calculated that. Janet Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, she said she is amazed how pessimistic households are given the number of jobs being created. And this is how out of touch our government is, the elites of us. Now, Janet Yellen just recommends doing exactly what she did. If you think if you're having problems paying more for a gallon of gasoline, if you're getting sticker shock at the grocery stores, just do what Janet Yellen did. She ran the Federal Reserve, and then when she quit that post, she made $7.2 million in a year speaking to the big banks. So to all you little people out there just grumbling about home unaffordability, the price of gasoline, the price of groceries, the price of a restaurant meal, for all of you out there whining about that, Janet Yellen made it. She's doing fine. Just go out and get $7.2 million in speaking fees to the big banks that you just got done regulating. I don't know why it's so hard. MarketWatch has got an article about this as interest rates rise. I have exceeded my free views, so I couldn't get down into the story, but the headline on MarketWatch was, all of this points to broader weakness in housing market, talking about the interest rate rises. Buyers are officially spooked by rising interest rates. Just don't expect a real estate crash, they say. Now, Janet Yellen did also say, our Treasury Secretary, I guess I should announce her title because people don't know who she is. They don't know that she headed the Federal Reserve. People are so ignorant about the people pulling these strings that have created this inflation. You look at Joe Biden and think he's the one responsible. Janet Yellen went from the Federal Reserve where she created this inflation. She's now our Treasury Secretary, where she will continue to create inflation. And she really is, I got to tell you, she's a great one to try to deflect. Have you seen her? I don't know if you've seen Janet Yellen. She's this tiny, tiny little white-haired woman. She looks like something out of some kind of a fantasy movie, some kind of a little gnome. So unassuming, staccato speech style. She just looks like she couldn't harm a fly. Yet she is the one that is largely responsible for what we're going through right now. Janet Yellen said she doesn't see a recession in the works. You know what that means for sure? There's a recession in the works. These people are chronically wrong. I'm not even sure why she would bother to say that. She knows darn good and well we're headed into recession, unless they're planning on cooking the books on GDP growth. But this story saying that don't expect a real estate crash almost says to me, expect a real estate crash. How in the world, I reported it yesterday, we've gone in the past year from people needing, 24.8% of their income per month to buy a house, to pay the mortgage on a house, up to 37.8% of the monthly income of the average family to be able to afford a mortgage. That's a big increase. We've gone from a little bit less than a quarter of your household income to more than a third of your income dedicated just to mortgage costs. So a giant chunk more of your income going to paying a mortgage. At the same time, costs are increasing in every other category that you have in expenditures. There's no way that this just continues, stays status quo. But there's one story that I've been following for 20 years now. Back when I was a financial advisor, I was an economics nerd back then too. And I remember seeing numbers about unfunded pension plans. I don't know how many of you are on a pension plan, if you're on the PERS system here in Mississippi. But there are tens of millions of Americans that have had these cushy government jobs, state, local, and federal government, the biggest employers in the country, I believe. So a lot of people have got these pension plans. And I remember back in the early 2000s, I became a financial advisor in 2001. And I remember studying some of this stuff and seeing the unfunded liabilities in pension plans. And back then I thought, uh-oh, this is going to be a big problem. Well, here we are 20 years later, and it really hasn't reared its head. But the problem has just gotten worse since then. It's much like everything else. We've papered over it, not talked about it. Unfunded state pension liabilities have climbed to $8.28 trillion. Or nearly $25,000 for every person in the United States, according to a new report from the American Legislative Exchange Council. That's ALEC. ALEC released the latest edition of its report on pensions in all 50 states Thursday. The report, quote, "Unaccountable and Unaffordable 2021, shows that just a handful of states with outsized pension liabilities account for a large share of overall pension debt in the U.S. States with the most unfunded liabilities were California, Illinois, Texas, there's the red state of Texas, New York, and Ohio. Top five states account for more than $3.5 trillion in unfunded liabilities, or about 43% of all unfunded liabilities in the U.S. Now, I don't know if this matters to anybody else, but what this says is we've got gaping holes in how we are going to pay the pension benefits for all of these people who are counting on them. I would imagine it's certainly in the tens of millions. It could certainly eclipse 100 million. There's people who stay on pensions for a long time. And these pension plans are running out of money. They've been forced into stock market returns as all these interest rates have been kept so low. These pension plans have had to invest in the stock market. Well, that's worked out great over the past 13 years, hasn't it? You've seen where the market is. So these pension plans couldn't get any returns on the bond market because interest rates were so low. So they went out and invested their money in riskier assets like stocks and real estate, those kinds of things. And still, even with a maybe unprecedented bull market run from 2009 or 2010, whenever the bottom was in the market, up to today, we've had a little bit of a weakness lately, but it's been pretty much straight up for the past, 12 years, and they are still $8.2 trillion underfunded in these pension plans. What happens if the stock market goes down now with all these investments? I have seen this as a train wreck for 20 years. If I could have found a way to bet against pension plans 20 years ago, I would have done it. I would have been so unbelievably early that I would have lost my shirt. But this is just another thing to be looking at. Eventually, we're going to have a pension crisis here. And these numbers are after these states got massive amounts of money surrounding COVID bailouts. Just massive, just hundreds of billions of dollars flowed to the states. We've talked about it here in Mississippi. We had $1.6 billion, something like that, came in that we just had sloshing around. Now, I didn't look up how underfunded Mississippi's pension plan is, the PERS. You might want to take a look at it if you're a PERS recipient, or maybe not. It's been profitable, or it's been nice to just ignore it for the last 20 years. Nobody really cares. They keep writing the checks. The problem is that these pension plans are essentially a Ponzi scheme at this point. But the states do not seem willing to do this. I mean, Illinois has got $533 billion short in their pension plan. And I can't imagine how many public service employees are depending on that money to make it through their retirement. At some point, something's going to break with these things. It'll just be one in a long series of things. Of course, we did these things to ourselves, all of these things, whether we have a housing crash, a pension crisis, market meltdown. We did all of these things. We're told that China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, those are all our biggest threats. It's what they've told you for forever. But actually, it's our political class. It's our political class and our bureaucracy here in the United States that has always been the biggest threat to you and your family. And the amazing thing is they still get us to vote for them. We actually express some approval, depending on who you are, which half of the political class you support and cheer for, and they've all got us in this same boat. It's a constant refrain of the show. I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, you know, my biggest heartbreak about all this stuff is what we've done to our children. I would say the baby boomers and Generation X are the most irresponsible generations to have ever come through the United States, and we may well end up wrecking the place. This makes some people mad. I worked hard. You worked hard, but you allowed just criminal activity to go on in your government as long as you had sports ball and Netflix and a new computer and an iPhone. Most people are guilty of that. We've taken our eye off this. We thought that as long as we pushed the button really hard for the party we had, everything would be fine. But no, we've been incredibly derelict. We're handing over just an absolute train wreck to our kids. I'm going to show you as a clip about what the Chinese kids are doing. And I heard this. It was interesting about, you know, what the sentiment is of the youth in China. But my real question is how long until we see this sentiment here in the United States? I'll make a prediction. Not long. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians.
All right, interesting things going on around the world. I wanted to play this clip about what Chinese kids are doing, and it's, you know, I think we don't pay enough attention to what goes on around the world to understand that a lot of these things come here. This is why I always look at COVID stuff when England starts locking down. I think, you know, oh, that's probably coming here. But these Chinese students, it's just kind of interesting. We talk about, you know, the differences in our system, but I think the result's going to end up being the same. Apparently China, and I keep making the point for all of you war hawks with China out there, you're ready to go fight. Well, you're not ready to go fight. You're ready to go send our kids off to fight Russia, China, if they invade Taiwan. But I'm telling you, China is an economic basket case. Communism doesn't work. This is what happened to the old Soviet Union. It will happen to China as well, even though they're crafty people. There's no doubt about it. They are a competitor on the world stage. They're going around buying up governments rather than spending trillions of dollars of taxpayer money to topple them and sacrificing their soldiers half a world away to fight and die in the sand or the jungles or the sludge in Ukraine. They just go around buying things. But they're printing money the same way we are, and they're seeing some of the same consequences of it. So there's this phenomenon going on with the Chinese kids. And I play this with just thinking, how long until we start seeing some movement like this here in the United States?
Recently, the term bai lan, or let it rot, has become popular among young people in China.
What the term is bai lan, and what he says there, it's not really clear, is let it rot. And so this is basically Chinese kids kind of just giving up.
Recently, the term bai lan, or let it rot, has become popular among young people in China. Prior to this trend, it was tong ping, or lying flat. On the Chinese social media platform Weibo, topics related to bai lan have generated hundreds of millions of reads and discussions since March 2022. Frustrated by the growing uncertainty and lack of economic opportunities, young Chinese are resorting to this new buzzword, bai lan, to express their attitude toward life. It means voluntarily giving up the pursuit of life goals because they realize that they are simply unattainable. Someone has to be a loser, why not me? It has become the iconic slogan of the waste group. Similar Chinese expressions include, to smash a cracked pot, or dead pigs are not afraid of boiling water. What are the behaviors of bai lan? On a Quora-like Chinese website, it's summarized as follows. My life is a mess. My attitude towards work. Why don't I quit my job? Gaming? Losing is fine. Weight loss? I don't care if I die from obesity. Old age? I quit living. Some people describe it this way. Sleep until 11 o'clock in the morning. Get up and order takeout. Turn on the computer to watch live streaming. Stare at the computer screen all day, grinning. Hiding under the covers at 12 o'clock at night, thinking about life, while turning on various social media platforms on the phone, raging against the injustice of this society. Another, more brilliant summary goes like this. Previously, when people called me a loser, I replied, "Damn, who are you talking about?" Now, when people call me a loser, I reply, "You're a good judge of character."
Boy, you know, and it, so essentially there's this movement in China. Now, this is very interesting to me. I'd like to find out more about this. In a communist system where we're told with communism, everybody's equal and happy. You've got equity and equality, right? This is the promise of communism, is that it takes care of everybody's needs. You don't need to worry about anything. You're just out there free to pursue your intellectual pursuits while all of your needs are taken care of. Well, it doesn't sound like the communist system over in China is doing very well by its youth. Now, they've got 1 billion people over there, but they said that these articles about lying flat or Bailan, let it rot, were read by hundreds of millions of people, and this is a youth thing. Now, I got to tell you, there's a lot of people out there that judge this younger generation here in the United States, and the refrain from, I hate to use the term, boomers, they just need to get a job. And we totally miss the mark that, you know, when we were graduating from college or graduating from high school, a house didn't cost 6 times your annual household income. It cost about 3 times your annual income. It's like we don't acknowledge the mess that we've created for these kids. We just judge them for not getting off their cans and doing something about it. Now, I am not a communist. I'm not a socialist. The government's not going to solve this. We need a complete, essentially, we need abolition of our government to actually fix any of these things. Nobody's really ready for that in this country right now. You will be at some point. Did the story yesterday. Trust in our government is down to its lowest on record, I believe. It's somewhere around 20%. If any of you in the 20% who trust and have faith in our government are around, feel free to call in 601-879-0002. I'd really like to pick your brain. What is it about our government that you find so appealing and trustworthy? But, you know, we have stacked the deck against these kids, and apparently they have done it in China as well. And so how long before there is a lying flat movement here in the United States? I tell you, I mean, I just believe my biggest job now, between now and the time that I pass away, is to try to do something to try to help my children so they don't lie flat. I've always thought about it. I'd love to, in an inflationary environment, be able to supplement my kids' income with whatever the inflation rate is every year. Just to my way of apologizing to them, not creating somebody lazy. I'm not going to hand anybody. My kids are not lazy kids. They work and have worked for years and years, even as 21-year-olds. But as a way to kind of atone, to apologize to them for the mess that our generation has created. We'll see if this comes to the United States. I would not be surprised at all if we see a whole lot of giving up, particularly as things worsen around this country. Not to be pessimistic, but I'm telling you, we have done these kids a great disservice. We'll be right back. Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Next hour, False Flag Friday, this week on the Crazy Train, as we do every Friday. Kind of wrap up the week in insanity. I did not watch any, well, I won't say any. I think I saw about 15 to 30 seconds of the January 6th stuff just because something popped up into my feed online. I certainly didn't tune in. I don't even know where this, I'm sure CNN and MSNBC carried it wall-to-wall coverage. But I guess it was on YouTube, and so a couple of things said watch live, and I clicked on them just to see what was going on. Benny Thompson certainly getting his moment in the sun. Let me tell you, all you people in the Delta, you know what you're going to get from this in your life? Doesn't matter which way these hearings go. Absolutely bupkis. Nothing. Nothing but a more controlling government. Nothing but worse economic times. There is not a thing Benny Thompson is delivering you that is going to improve your lot in life one iota. I also saw in the few seconds that I saw when I first clicked on, it was Liz Cheney talking. If only there had been a group of people out there warning everybody about the Cheneys decades ago. Oh, that's right, there was. They were called libertarians. Back when Dick Cheney was still a hero of the right, everybody thought he was the strong vice president leading that war on terror, a no-nonsense guy, a corporate guy. Libertarians were telling you he was a blood-soaked monster and his offspring were no different. But, of course, I don't know what happened to the people of Montana. They love the Cheneys because they're, you know, they're our guys. Liz Cheney was doing her spiel on it, and she has gone full-on threat to our democracy. But I did not watch much of this. I'm sure I'll find some clips over the course of the weekend of some weird things or stupid things said during these hearings. But I do not. I've got 2 hours a day. I do almost no political theater. And that's what this is. This is fully produced, Hollywood-caliber political theater going on. And I don't know if they think that you won't notice what's happening to your life, particularly financially right now, if you're absolved in this, absorbed into this, what are they, I think it's, did I see this as an 8-part series? They're doing it like a mini series on television. I don't know, is it on again tonight? I'm not following any of it. I couldn't care less. And I would imagine that attack on the Capitol, if we continue to see things shaping up the way they're shaping up right now, that's going to be small. And what I would encourage all you people on the right, now this was largely led by Trump supporters who believe the election was stolen, but I would imagine the people are going to continue to get more and more agitated as time goes on. And what happened on January 6th, at some point, maybe not in the too distant future, will be considered a small incursion into the Capitol when people on the right and the left, when people who are black and are white, when the old and the young all realize the job that's been done on you by your federal government of both parties, I would imagine we may see more incursions into these buildings in Washington, D.C. This story came out again on financial stuff, and I'm going to move to something else that I thought was kind of interesting from a little bit of history. But in a stunning miss, University of Michigan sentiment collapsed in preliminary June data, crashing from 58.4 to 50.2. This was massively below the 58.1 expectations. The current conditions gauge, this is how they, you know, they call up. And, how do you think everything's going, average Joe, average Jane? The current conditions gauge sank to a record low 55.4 from 63.3, while a measure of expectations decreased to 46.8 from 55.2. I don't even know what this scale is with these numbers, but the bottom line is that consumers not feeling real spiffy about the future. Throughout the survey, consumers signaled strong concerns that inflation will continue to erode their incomes, and the factors they cited are unlikely to abate soon. While consumer spending has remained robust so far, and we know how that how consumer spending has remained robust so far. They've been packing expenditures on their credit cards. And when you see an increase in the retail sales number, it does not take a rocket scientist to figure out, yes, there are increases in the dollar amount of purchases now because everything costs more. People are actually buying less but paying more for less these days. But the consumer has only remained robust, according to this report, because of credit card debt. We've covered the numbers here. We have a record amount of credit card debt in this country right now, and it has been accelerating in the past 4 or 5 months by record amounts on a monthly level. This report said while consumer spending has remained robust so far, the broad deterioration of sentiment may lead them to cut back on spending and thereby slow down economic growth. Yeah, you think? So the Federal Reserve now, in light of the new inflation numbers, is poised to hike rates by 0.5%. Guess what that'll do? Nothing. Absolutely zero. And as these months go by, understand this too. Inflation has been with us. That's been reported and talked about. People are finally noticing it because it's so severe. Because the numbers were up last year. Pretty soon we're going to get into numbers where there may be a month last year that was up 5 or 6% from the year before, and now we see 8% from the last year number that was already 6%. You understand what I'm saying? We're now seeing compounding returns, compounding inflation numbers. And the Federal Reserve's response to that is, we may tick interest rates up to around 2.5%, maybe 3%. This will accomplish absolutely nothing but make the situation worse. It's incredible to watch. This was just an interesting... Oh, I didn't read my quote of the day today. It just popped up on my screen. This is George Carlin. He said, I've got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country. Now, I'd imagine if George Carlin was still with us. I see. Did he die in 2008? Could it have been that long ago? I really wish he was here to document our times now. It'd be very interesting to hear George Carlin's take on how Americans are being abused right now. But I would imagine his faith in the media would have been the same as with the government, nothing and zero. But this was interesting. You know, we talk a lot, conservative talk radio, about the left-leaning tilt of Hollywood, and particularly lately with Green New Deal, with the woke corporations. I still need to do a segment on exactly how the woke corporations came about. The timing of it's a tad bit suspicious. Well, I'll go ahead and get into it now. I don't know if anybody noticed, but back in 2008, 2009, into 2010, two massive movements erupted. It was Occupy Wall Street, and it was the Tea Party. Now, the Tea Party was really about taxation and large government, and they were anti-bailouts. Ron Paul was really the colonel that was at the heart of the Tea Party movement originally, before the Republican Party went in and embraced it, realized it was a powerful political movement, and so the Republican Party hijacked it. What was that guy's name? He was a Texas congressman, a hero of the Republican Party. I'm spacing on his name right now, but I remember him ascending to some level of leadership of the Tea Party, and he led it right back into the Republican Party, and they haven't been heard of since. On the left, the Democrats did the same thing to Occupy. They went in and absorbed Occupy movement back into the Democratic Party. But what happened was there was a call, particularly across the left, to hold the banks and the corporations accountable for the abuses that they saw during the financial crisis, the bailouts, these kinds of things. Strangely enough, during that time, this is when corporations started going woke. And if you notice now, the left, who were really the biggest opponents of some of these massive multinational corporations that were paying zero in taxes, they were getting massively wealthy. Their CEOs were earning 300 times the average of the worker. You know, in the past, those numbers might have been 5 times. The left was really hell-bent on going after these big corporations and these mega banks while people lost their homes. While people were kicked out into the street and made homeless, the banks were bailed out and were still getting record bonuses. And the left was pointing this out. Strangely, at that time, corporations decided to go a little woke. They started flying rainbow banners during Pride Month. They started talking about equality and equity and all of the rest of these woke policies. These are not held beliefs. Now, I'm sure there's a really creepy video going around of a woman in HR somewhere. There are definitely some wokesters in the corporate culture. They've been brought in since then. But what we found is that, and you notice this particularly with like pharmaceutical companies, the left no longer is mad at the big corporations. They think the big corporations are now their allies, and all it took for the banks to avoid scrutiny anymore by the left was to start pretending to be woke, to start talking about these things. This is the origin of this. See, corporations just, they don't care about these things. They don't care about equity. They don't care about climate. They don't care about these things. Now, the climate, the ESG hustle is something kind of separate. But the rest of the wokeness at the corporate level, I believe, is probably a response to the fact that people were really just about ready for pitchforks and torches for the financial elites in this country. And so they decided to disarm the left by pretending to be one of them. And the left dropped all opposition. You don't hear anybody on the left talking about the excesses of J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and these corporations anymore. No, they think that now that Goldman Sachs might put out a press release about adding some diversity to their board of directors or recognizing transgender rights. All Goldman Sachs has to do to dupe the left is to put out a press release or send out a tweet with some color flag on the thing. And the left stood down, and the banks and the big corporations have avoided all scrutiny from the left ever since then. But this is also not a new thing when it comes to entertainment, and I just thought this was interesting. I ran across this on the No Agenda Show is a podcast that I really do like. Get a lot of good stuff from them, but they had a clip from Mork and Mindy. You talk about the kind of the greening, you know, we look at what's going on now with climate change legislation and what corporations intend to do and this Green New Deal here in the United States. But this has been going on for a while, and I thought this was interesting. This is a Mork and Mindy clip from 1979.
It's nothing serious. It's just the world as we know it is coming to an end.
That's about time.
The world as we know it is coming to an end.
Right. You see, I went downtown to buy a book, The Life and Hard Times of Princess Rainier of Monaco. And there, plastered over every magazine and newspaper was Energy Crisis. But don't panic. Don't panic. Remain calm.
Energy Crisis. Big deal.
Big deal. It is a big deal, Mr. Smarty Pants Republican. Unless we find an alternative source of energy for oil, we have to conserve. And that's why I was out making darn sure we conserve.
Oh, Mark, what were you doing?
Well, I shut out all the streetlights in downtown Boulder. Took out all the traffic lights, too. I'm going to kind of miss them, though. Red, yellow, green, such festive colors. They were so pretty. People used to stop their cars and watch them change.
Mark, relax, okay?
Relax? Relax? How can I relax? Minnie, there's a world beyond I Love Lucy. Don't you understand? We're running out of fossil fuels. There aren't any more dinosaurs dying and dinosaurs still in residuals. Don't you understand? It's a whole different world. And pretty soon, 100 years from now, they'll be drilling into cemeteries looking for oil. I'd like us to see the advertising slogans now. Put a relative in your tank and then have testimonials. Hey, I got 20 miles to the gallon using my Aunt Tess.
Mark, there is an energy crisis, and in 50 or 60 years, we probably won't have any more oil.
But and there you go. This is one of those 1970s predictions. There are a bunch of these. The world will be overpopulated by 1990. There won't be enough food to feed the planet. You know, that was a big scare, overpopulation. Climate crisis. We've had failed prediction after failed prediction. Cities will be underwater by the year 2000. That's what they were saying back in the 1970s, and obviously, we would be completely out of oil. So she said 50 years. So according to Mindy from Mork and Mindy, we should be running out of oil in any minute now.
50 years, we probably won't have any more oil. But a lot of people believe that the oil companies are just using scare tactics so they can hike the prices. Somebody's getting very rich at our expense.
I don't understand. Why would someone else want to get rich at someone else's expense?
Let me put it to you this way. Some of us believe the people who own the oil are shaking down the rest of the world.
Oh, so that's why they call shakes, for the booty.
As long as the oil companies keep backing the politicians, well... So what's so funny about that?
Nothing.
Yeah, so this is not really new. I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, another one of our 1970s predictions. No more oil by 2030 is what Mindy said. And some people call this predictive programming too. You go ahead and float these things out on mainstream media and people start to believe them. I'll be right back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right, only got a couple minutes left in this hour, and we'll come back with taking a look at foreign policy and really just some of the massive cons being pulled on people with this Ukraine stuff. It's really a lot like COVID. I really find it hard to believe people are still masking. It's just now we've had years of evidence that masking doesn't work. Tons of studies that show that masking is actually harmful to the wearer of the mask while accomplishing nothing, yet people continue to do it. We've got people who have been vaccinated getting COVID for the third, fourth, fifth time. I saw some study, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, said that people who've been boosted are twice as likely to get COVID now. It's pretty amazing. They're twice as likely to get COVID after getting a booster. And then they credit the vaccine for not dying from the infection that was caused by the vaccine. This is, the circular logic is just bizarre. But the same thing goes for people who are still flying the Ukraine flag. I mean, the information is in now. The Ukrainian army is full of Nazis. I'm going to give you a story in a few minutes about something the Ukrainian army is up to, what they're doing in this loving democracy over there. Not to mention trying to ethnically cleanse large parts of their country in the east, in the Donbass region and Crimea. The Ukrainian government was actively involved in essentially a genocide against ethnic Russians in their own country, but people are flying a Ukraine flag. I've got a story also coming up in just a second about American mercenaries going over and fighting with the Ukrainian army and what they're worried about when these people come home. And you stop and think. I mean, I'll point it out. We're funding this government. We're funding their military operations, knowing they have a large streak of Nazism in them. It is just absolutely beyond belief. Anyway, lots on Ukraine coming up and finishing up with This Week on the Crazy Train. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Friday at 10 o'clock. We focus in on foreign policy stuff, particularly today with a lot of stuff with Ukraine, and then a little report put out on Yemen that nobody's paying attention to. I wonder if the country of Yemen is mentioned anywhere on Central Mississippi Radio except here, yet it is one of the most catastrophic human tragedies on the face of the planet. You would think a caring Christian nation would actually care about what's going on over there, but we don't, you know, out of sight, out of mind. It's really sad stuff over there. Quote of the day today. Hemingway, I believe he was traveling through Europe and saw inflation, and I think he'd done some study into the hyperinflation in Weimar Germany. But Hemingway noted, war often follows inflation. This is something we all need to keep in mind. They need a big distraction, and they're trying their best with this Ukrainian situation. Quote, this is Hemingway, "No one man nor group of men incapable of fighting or exempt from fighting should in any way be given the power, no matter how gradually it is given to them, to put this country or any country into war." I think we talked about this last week. It might have been off air with a caller. You notice that the people that are always leading us to war are never the ones that actually go fight this. Those days are long since gone of the king or the prince leading the troops into battle. Now we've got a bunch of neocon chicken hawks sitting up in air-conditioned buildings, driving around with full armored security in their SUVs, sending our kids halfway around the world to fight and die for some other country's borders. I believe the saying should be, if you kill one person, you're a murderer. If you kill 10 people, you're a mass shooter. If you kill 50 people, you're a serial killer. But if you kill 50,000 people, it just makes you a politician in the United States here. There was a video out. If you want to email me, you can get the link. You really should see this thing. There's a video that was put out of the Ukrainian soldiers, you know, in one of these news reports. And it shows the Ukrainians bravely fighting off Russian advance. The guys are, it looks like they go into kind of a bombed out building and they're shooting out of the building, engaging with Russian troops and falling back some. This is some of the war footage that we're getting from Ukraine, the limited amounts that we are. I really don't see a whole lot, but I'll be honest, I don't follow a lot of mainstream news anymore. But there's an interesting video that was put out where somebody was filming this, and when the thing first starts, it looks like you're seeing actual footage of Ukrainian soldiers engaging this Russian battle as they go through a bombed out, you know, they jump behind the pillars of the building and they shoot, and there's sparks that fly as shots supposedly come in against them, and they're in this formation. Suddenly this camera crew goes in front of the person that's recording this thing, and it is full on with a director shouting out orders to these people. And the cameraman that's doing this is not some war reporter, you know, with the camera up on his shoulder. Now, they have that get up where they put on some kind of a vest so it kind of controls the vibration of the camera. I don't think I'm describing this well. But it's what they use in Hollywood. And so this thing is, I don't know if it's gyroscope or what it is, but it keeps it steady and it's this big holster. And the funny thing is that these producers that are calling out orders to these Ukrainian troops to film this, air quotes here in the studio, fight scene with the Russians, none of them are wearing any kind of protective helmets, no flak vests, no nothing. And there is a director actually telling these Ukrainian guys, fall back, or I don't know what they're saying. They're speaking in Ukrainian. But when you see these things, I mean, this is just goes to my catalog of clips that I've seen where you see what is really behind the propaganda of war. I talked about many times about the footage that I saw from the Middle East where two guys go in the back seat of a car. They put something in there and then they run away from the car. The car blows up. There's nobody around. This car blows up and it's on fire. And then suddenly you see about 30 people rush into the screen and they all lay on the ground like they were just killed by this explosion in the Middle East. This is war propaganda. It's done with every war. It's not new. This is always done. But this is a pretty telling video seeing the Ukrainian army supposedly in action defending their country. Of course, it's not just Ukrainians that are there. Well, let me get into this story while we're talking about that. The top Ukrainian official who was fired for spreading misinformation has admitted that she lied about Russian committing mass rape in order to convince Western countries to send more weapons to Ukraine. In an interview published by Ukrainian news outlet, Denisova admitted that her falsehoods had achieved their intended goal. Quote, when, for example, I spoke in the Italian parliament at the Committee of International Affairs, I heard and saw such fatigue from Ukraine, you know? I talked about terrible things in order to somehow push them to make the decisions that Ukraine and the Ukrainian people need, she said. Denisova noted that Italy's five-star movement was originally, quote, against the provision of weapons to us, but after her speech, one of the party leaders said that they will support Ukraine, including by the provision of weapons, despite the fact. All right, and I believe we are back, so we will continue this. It sounds like some bad storms coming our way. But back to this top Ukrainian official who was fired for spreading misinformation, despite the fact that her claims about mass rape were false. They were repeatedly amplified by the legacy media outlets like anyone, CNN and The Washington Post. I would imagine these things also appeared on MSNBC and on Fox News. Quote, the media was quick to put this woman's BS claims out, but couldn't care less about correcting the record, writes Chris Minahan. Indeed, there have been innumerable outright hoaxes and falsehoods throughout the war when so-called fact-checkers have been noticeable by their absence. These include radiation leaks at besieged nuclear plants, which turned out to not have occurred, the media's complete misinformation about what happened on Snake Island, the Ghost of Kiev hoax, as well as the attack on a Holocaust memorial that never happened. We are being treated to basically a 360-degree war propaganda, and it's resulted in tens of billions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer money that's been shipped over to Ukraine. Now, there are many still flying the Ukrainian flag on their social media. They stand with Ukraine. And when we come back, I'm gonna play a story. A reporter named Mark Ames, an actual journalist, not a CNN correspondent, somebody who's an actual journalist, was over in Ukraine covering this. He's a Brooklyn native, apparently, has written for many different outlets, one of these freelance guys. And he was on a show. He may even host a podcast. I'm not sure. His name is Mark Ames. We're going to listen to what he saw take place in Ukraine. And it's another one of these instances of this loving democracy with this poor, put-upon, underdog army facing off with the Russians. We need to send them as many weapons as we can because they're on the side of good. Remember, Ukraine good, Russia bad. Well, we're going to play these stories, what he tells about what he saw in Ukraine at the hotel he was staying at. Very interesting story. Be right back. All right, we're going to look further into this Ukrainian army, this loving defender of freedom and democracy in Ukraine. I had read, I made a note for myself, I didn't follow it up. To all the people on the left, they're flying the Ukraine flag and standing with Ukraine. Is it inconvenient that if, and I guess I'll look this up to verify, I should have already done this, they don't allow same-sex marriage. It's banned in Ukraine. Interesting. That's something I guess you got to wrestle with. But if you still believe the Ukrainian army is just this ragtag bunch of underdogs that we need to support with every last taxpayer dollar and that we should fight to the last Ukrainian, I thought this was an interesting story. This is, again, it's journalist Mark Ames, and he was in Ukraine, staying at a big swanky hotel when he had an interesting experience.
Where did you stay? I mean, like, did you stay in a hotel in Kyiv, or did you stay in, like, a somebody's apartment, or how'd you work that?
In Kyiv, I stayed at a hotel. I'll tell a little anecdote about the Premier Palace Hotel, where a lot of journalists were staying at.
Mm-hmm.
I came down one morning from my room, and there was like 100+ soldiers and police just like camped out on the ground floor of the hotel. And they were everywhere throughout the hotel. And it's a kind of a fancy hotel. Mm-hmm. And they were like hanging out, in, you know, sitting on the grand piano, sitting, smoking cigars in like the smoking room. It was like an occupation. I had no idea what was going on. I asked the reception, and because, you know, these guys had just come off the front lines. I mean, you could smell it on. They smelled like dirty laundry, right. Stale cigarette smoke, wow. You know.
Yep.
And I asked the receptionist what's going on. And he's like, oh, it's no problem. You know, they just want to talk to somebody who's here. And the Ukrainian forces had put up like these banners in the hotel, like showing what I gathered was like the ownership structure of the hotel. And basically they had come to seize this property in a very dramatic way with a large force. And I could not figure out at all what was going on. Like I asked, you know, Ukrainian people that I knew, like, what's going on here? And, you know, one woman told me that, hey, this is typical for Ukraine. Like sometimes yes. properties change hands without any, you know, paperwork being signed or without any deals.
Raids is what I mean. Yeah. And you use muscle. That's where like a lot of these Azov and right sector guys, you know, that was their job before the war in Donbas started, was working with oligarchs to physically seize other oligarchs' properties.
Huh. Well, it's interesting. We haven't heard that on the mainstream news, have we? Well, the Ukrainian army, in the midst of this battle for their very existence against Russia, they've got time to swing by a swanky hotel and just take the place. And the guy says, you know, yeah, this is what Azov Brigade and large parts of the Ukrainian military were doing before this war broke out. They were basically just gangsters. And they were doing the will of some oligarchs to just go take stuff from the other oligarchs. So they come in and just, essentially, they just seize this hotel. These are the people at the receiving end right now of at least $54 billion of U.S. taxpayer dollars.
I gather there were a lot of other Western journalists in this hotel. I mean, none of them pursued that story?
There were a lot of Western journalists there from major, you know, publications. And, yeah, like I said, I couldn't find anything about it afterwards.
Is right. So the mainstream media, so Western media is in this hotel when the Ukrainian army just comes in and just takes it. That wasn't a crime committed. They just decided, you know, they're working for an oligarch who said, hey, man, that Palace Hotel, what did he call it? The Palace Hotel. Y'all go take that for me. And the military goes, okay, all right, we'll go get it. And the Western media is there. They're staying there. They know this is going on, but it's not reported.
It's one of the nicest hotels in Kyiv, if not the nicest. And certainly someone would very much like to own that property. Like,
yep.
This is a place that's worth a ton of money. So I certainly was made curious by that incident. And all I could learn was that the owners were apparently linked to Yanukovych. That was the most specific that anyone could be.
Yeah, and just remember, Ukraine known to be one of the most corrupt countries on planet Earth. Keep on flying that Ukraine flag. This is absolutely bizarre. This is his final clip on that.
There are a lot of journalists who need to file some, at least one thing a day, if not several. And it's just kind of interesting that nobody, maybe they tried pushing and their editors were like, well, that's not relevant. They didn't want to hear it. A lot of times editors kind of drive these things, I guess. But it's just interesting that story, which is really interesting, and had that happened in Russia, where journalists were staying, you know, reporting on the war, and then there was a there was a raid like that, as they call, like, that would have been a pretty big, interesting story. Or if it was before this war, it would have been an interesting story.
Yeah. So that's where we are. Yeah. If this had happened in Russia, if there were a bunch of Western media from CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and Washington Post, and New York Times, if they had been in the hotel in Russia and the Russian army had just come in and taken the place, occupied it, raided it, and seized it for no reason, they just decide they're going to take one of the most expensive properties in Moscow, the Russian army does, you can bet your bottom dollar that the Western media would have been leading every newspaper with stories about such an atrocity by Vladimir Putin's army. Yet Zelensky's army is going in basically like a gang of thieves, and they've been doing this for quite a while. This is what they cut their teeth on. It was just a, you know, just this kind of rank corruption there. And this is, like I say, not reported here in the Western press. Final story here, just on foreign policy stuff. As I say, if you kill one person, you're a murderer. You shoot 10 somewhere, you're a mass shooter. You kill 50, you're a serial killer. But if you kill 50,000, you're just a politician. According to the Washington Post, along with the Security Force Monitor, SFM, at Columbia Law School's Human Rights Institute, they analyzed thousands of news reports and images to identify warplanes from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates that have attacked Yemen. Quote, a substantial portion of the air raids were carried out by jets developed, maintained, and sold by U.S. companies and by pilots who were trained by the U.S. military. Our foreign policy establishment, our government, the U.S. government, is currently involved in some of the worst war crimes on planet Earth right now. And this is certainly not the first time, but this is an especially tragic one. As I say, though, I would imagine the word Yemen is only repeated on one show in central Mississippi at any point, and that is on this one. It really is, if you go and look and see some of the scenery of what's taken place in Yemen, it is heartbreaking. I have empathy for life wherever it is, even if they're a different color and speak a different language. And what's happening in Yemen is absolutely atrocious. You know, Joe Biden campaigned and said when he got into office that he was going to stop this. He has not. Donald Trump campaigned as kind of the peace candidate. Yet when he got into office, Congress voted to get us out of the Yemeni war. And Donald Trump used one of his rare vetoes to veto that to keep us in the Yemeni war. Went over and did the sword dance with the Saudis, sold the Saudis a lot of weapons to murder innocent Yemenis, and Joe Biden's doing exactly the same thing. Again, he campaigns on getting us out of this because it's such a war crime, yet he is still selling weapons, and I believe Biden has a trip planned to Saudi Arabia to beg them to pump a little bit of oil and give us a break over here before the midterms. So Saudi Arabia, that great friend of ours, and now we find out they're buying our golfers. I mean, come on, is there not a line too far for the Saudi Arabians and our relationship with them? You know, I look at these things, and they're debating in Congress right now these red flag laws. If you want to know anywhere that a red flag law should be enforced, and I'm not for them when they come to the Second Amendment here in the United States, but if we should have international red flag laws in our government, it is quite obvious that the foreign policy group in Washington, D.C. has been criminally insane for decades, and they need to be disarmed immediately. I'll be right back.
What's the frequency? Can it be shot? Things are drained.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9. We're to our final segment of the week. And this one that I call every Friday, I'm going to finish it up as we document the world's descent into utter madness. It is This Week on the Crazy Train.
All aboard!
when it comes to, you know, we have just decided, I've talked about it for a while now, we just say things now, right? There doesn't have to be any scientific fact to anything. You just pronounce things. Pandemic of the unvaccinated, you just say it. There's no evidence of that kind of thing. You just say it. Little boy born with a penis is not necessarily a boy. We just say that we're not sure what it is. Well, California has jumped the shark in the identity politics here, where they're even going into the animal and insect kingdom and allowing them to identify as something else.
Bumblebees are now being classified as fish in California. The move protects them as an endangered species. Until now, the state's Endangered Species Act only listed birds, mammals, fish, amphibians, reptiles, and plants, not insects. Closer look at the definition of fish is the code includes mollusk, crustacean, invertebrate. So bumblebees qualify as terrestrial invertebrate under the fish umbrella and can be protected under the act. So there you go.
Getting creative.
So, yeah, California leading another charge there. Now bees are fish in California. This is happening in Great Britain. The Times of London reported on Tuesday that the main National Health Service web pages on ovarian, womb, and cervical cancer is no longer referred to women on some of their main pages. For example, the womb cancer page used to say that, quote, cancer of the womb, uterine, or endometrial cancer is a common cancer that affects the female reproductive system. It's more common in women who have been through menopause. Now it says that, quote, most womb cancer usually starts in the lining of the womb, endometrium. This is also known as endometrial cancer. For the ovarian cancer page, the site used to say that, quote, ovarian cancer mainly affects women who have been through menopause, usually over the age of 50, but it can sometimes affect younger women. Now the guidance says that, quote, ovarian cancer affects the two small organs, ovaries, that store the eggs needed to make babies. Anyone with ovaries can get ovarian cancer, but it mostly affects those over 50. Look, I do an hour every day. If you want to escape the medical system, tune in every Wednesday between 10 and 11 o'clock. I am the Harriet Tubman of getting people out of the medical system. They've lost their ever-loving minds. They no longer now refer to women when it comes to ovarian cancer. Kind of crossing into more medical news. This is a little old for everybody. I like it when things are fresh here, haven't been heard anywhere else, but this was pretty popular. Anthony Fauci was on Fox News, where he has had a prominent role because Fox News is just another part of the mainstream media. I think most people have caught on to that now. Now, save Tucker Carlson that does something a little bit different. Hopefully everybody's turned their back on Sean Hannity now, but I recently saw the ratings, and he still gets a few million dupes every night. But Fox News had Anthony Fauci on to discuss, I think this was Neil Cavuto. Is that who it was? Neil Cavuto, a total globalist stooge, Wall Street guy. But he was talking to Anthony Fauci on this, you know, they're challenging for mask mandates on airlines. And Anthony Fauci says, well, it's not really about health or safety. It's about power.
So, Dr. Witt, at the same time, the Justice Department is pushing an appeals court to intervene on this ruling that lifts mask mandates and public transportation, mass transit, that sort of thing. What do you think of that?
Wait, are you asking me what I think about the Justice Department appealing this court decision about pulling back?
Exactly.
You know, one of the issues, Neil, that I have articulated in the past, and I will in the future, it's less about mandates on the plane than it is about who has the right and the authority and the capability of making public health decisions. And I believe that the Department of Justice is operating on the principle that decisions that are public health decisions belong with the public health agency, in this case, the CDC. So it's more of a matter of principle of where the authority lies than it is about whether or not there's going to be a mandate on a plane or not.
Yeah, there you go. It's not about your health. It's not about them scrambling to put these valuable masks back on people. Of course, they don't work and they're dangerous to you. It's all about power. Our own Justice Department is trying to make sure that we recognize the CDC's authority over all of us. And then there was this.
But do you personally, Doc, I mean, when you travel and when you go around, do you prefer wearing a mask yourself? I know you've avoided public venues of large gatherings. I think the White House Correspondents' Dinner comes to mind.
Yeah, of course, during the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Anthony Fauci did make a big deal about he's not going to attend. He's worried about it. It did turn out to be a super spreader event. But he also was seen maskless along with everybody else maskless at some of the either before parties or after parties. He was out and about in large gatherings. He just didn't go to this one particular thing to just do a little bit of propaganda that he's still worried about it. But just listen to Anthony Fauci talk about personal decisions.
Do you still have those reservations, even now?
Yeah, well, I do. I mean, the CDC continues to recommend that when people fly, that they wear masks. Now, the mandate has been pulled back on the decision of the court, but that does not change the recommendation of the CDC, Neil, or my own personal preference. When I travel on the plane, given my evaluation of my personal risk.
Are we allowed to do that? Make our own personal evaluation of our own personal risk and what we find acceptable? Well, it's not okay for us. We've been denied that for 2 years. But Anthony Fauci makes this calculation all by himself because he's better than us.
As a person of my age, with or without underlying conditions, that I feel that I would be much more comfortable for my safety and even for the safety of others to wear a mask. But that's a recommendation. That's not a mandate.
All right. So it wasn't your way of saying you didn't want to be hounded by people who know you, right? I mean, you just wanted to keep that on for your safety. Just saying. I'm just throwing
yes,
that out there.
It certainly is.
Yeah, the translation of that is, I bet there's a bunch of Americans really want to punch you in the face. So maybe you hide behind that mask so nobody notices you. And I think that's probably more a reason he wears those things. This was Jacinda. She's the Prime Minister of New Zealand. And just interesting, she was one of the biggest authoritarians in the world when it came to COVID. And she's kind of making the rounds. I guess she's getting paid now for what she did. And she was visiting with some familiar names.
For Ardern, New York was meant to be about trade and tourists. After her COVID nightmare back home this morning, she woke up finally here in the city that never sleeps. Here to buddy up to the States and open more doors to trade.
Prime Minister, how's your day going?
Oh, it's busy but fantastic.
Like the doors to $10 trillion investment firm BlackRock. But Ardern is not just a brand ambassador. She's the Prime Minister with power, and those she's meeting know it.
Yeah. That's Jacinda. She locked down her people. New Zealand went full on authoritarian during COVID, and now she's meeting. She's meeting with BlackRock in New York City. Canada, I told you this is the world's descent into madness. Canada's not done with their authoritarian. They got to start practicing. You know, they had some freedom fighters up there in Canada. You might remember those truckers. They got to start practicing for them. This was a drill that they're running up in Canada.
A scene unfolded at Pearson Airport today that could have fooled onlookers.
So today we're having a mock emergency exercise happening. So we're testing our response to an emergency or security situation. So we've got protesters in the back who have been very enthusiastic about playing their roles, and we've been testing our response to it.
Yes, as you can see, people, both volunteers and airport employees, getting into character for the fake protest. The exercise is actually a requirement by Transport Canada. The GTAA says it's an important way to test the airport's emergency response.
There you go. They are actually putting together fake protesters chanting out freedom. They need to be prepared to fight against people who are asking for freedom. This is now North America, Western democracies, air quotes here in the studio. This is what it's come to. They're preparing. They're not going to be caught flat-footed again when those pesky citizens start demanding their freedom again. They'll be ready. All right, when I come back, we'll get into Biden. Got a couple of clips on him. And a Kamala Harris clip. It's just between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they can speak endlessly and say nothing. It's kind of interesting to actually hear. We'll do that when we come back. Stick around.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment as we finish up and wrap up this week on the Crazy Train. But before we do, let me remind you, as I do, my parting advice every Friday before I leave is if you're looking for somewhere to go eat anytime during the week, but particularly this weekend, check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. They are located 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. 10 and 14 inch brick oven fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, beer, wine, They got it all. It's made the way you want it. You go down the line, pick out your toppings, so everybody gets their own pizza of the 10-inch, or you can share one for the family, but you're going to make it the way you want it. I always remember having to eat pizza that my kids always had to pick the toppings of. And when Your Pie solves that little problem, they've got televisions there if you want to catch a sporting event. Got a patio out there. Once the storm clears out, might be some decent weather to sit outside. This is a veteran-owned, locally-owned business, and they also are provided takeout service through TakeABreakDeliveries.com. TakeABreakDeliveries.com is the only authorized delivery company for Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. All right, so anyway, check out Your Pie this weekend. If you survive the storm, the coming apocalypse. Anyway, that's Your Pie, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. Express your inner pizza. All right, let's finish up with some of these clips here. What have we got? Let's get to Joe Biden appeared. I've not watched this whole thing, and I actually do want to see it. It's one of those things that I know is going to make me feel uncomfortable. You ever watch something where you see somebody fail really bad? It just, it makes you uncomfortable, even if you don't like the person. Watching Joe Biden, I pulled it up last night. I couldn't do it. I just wasn't in the mood. I think he did like a 23-minute interview on Kimmel. Could that possibly be right? Jimmy Kimmel has sold his soul to this mental patient. It was really hard to watch the little bit that I did, how Jimmy Kimmel's got to try to carry water for this guy who is obviously, to everybody watching, a complete mental basket case. This was Joe Biden on Jimmy Kimmel talking a lot and saying nothing.
So there's a lot of major things we've done. But what we haven't done is we haven't been able to communicate it in a way that is, let me say another way.
Well, see, that's kind of perfect. Yeah, well, we haven't been able to communicate
but
it.
But look how the press has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Look how the press has changed.
It has changed. Oh, listen, I get it.
I know you overstand it.
Yeah.
You don't just understand it, you overstand it. But here's the deal. One of the things is that it's very difficult now to have a...
And there it
even
goes.
With notable exceptions, even the really good reporters, they have to get the number of clicks on the nightly news.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of asking a question, anyway, it just everything gets sensationalized in ways. But I'm convinced we can get through this. We have to get through it. And one of the things, look.
I'm going to take a break, and then we'll talk a little bit more.
I don't mind.
I'm sorry. We have some of those commercials. Biracial commercials we need to show.
Yeah, and he went on to some spiel about biracial commercials. There was some other stuff, but you just got to love it. I guarantee you the producer was in Jimmy Kimmel's ear where they're just like, look, he's melting down. We need to come in. I guess they give him a shot during the commercial breaks, try to get him through one more segment. It must really feel bad to try. You know, Jimmy Kimmel's just become such a creep. Really, it's just been disgusting over years and years. He's sold out. I don't know what he's getting paid to carry water for this government, whether it's vaccines or bashing Trump or whatever it was. He's become disgusting, but it's got to be, he's got to really think that his career is just in the toilet if he's got to serve people like Joe Biden. It was, that's just painful to listen to. A minute long clip. The guy basically didn't say anything at all, and they had to cut him off because they could tell he was starting to disappear there and not finish out a thought. So if we get rid of Joe Biden, I've already missed my prediction. I thought he'd be out in May, but he's still hanging in there. But waiting in the wings is Kamala. I'd never noticed this, but somebody's put together a supercut. She's got a new word, unburdened.
That's why we're here today, because we have the ability to see what can be unburdened by what has been, and then to make the possible actually happen.
To believe in what can be unburdened by what has been. And we must always see who we can be unburdened by who we have been.
An ability to see what can be unburdened by what has been.
What can be unburdened by what has been. To see what can be unburdened by what has been.
We see what can be unburdened by what has been.
Bring people to see what can be unburdened by what has been.
Who see what can be unburdened by what has been. It is the ability to see what can be unburdened by what has been.
So she's just traipsing the country, repeating the same lines again. I guess they finally settled on something that she can get through without cackling. I don't know. What? Just unbelievably empty suit. This was an interesting one. Michael Steele. This is one of your strong Republicans there. Black guy. I think he used to head the RNC. I think this is him weighing in on the January 6th stuff. He says something very interesting about Ron DeSantis here. Some kind of a weird slip.
Ron DeSantis over the weekend in a conservative straw poll beat out Trump. But Ron DeSantis, that's just another version of Trump.
When you're looking at someone like DeSantis, who is just a dressier, a more suave and deboner version of the Trump man, right?
I think he's I can only imagine he's trying to say debonair, suave and debonair, right? I don't know where Michael Steele came up with deboner.
Beat out Trump. But Ron DeSantis, that's just another version of Trump.
When you're looking at someone like DeSantis, who is just a dressier, a more suave and deboner version of the Trump man, right? He's going to be able to go out there and try to play that lane that's going to keep that Trump voter in play. But the problem is, still remains for someone like him is Donald Trump, because he's hitched so much to Trump. When Trump gets mad at him, and Trump is not feeling him right now because he's been saying all this stuff about Trump, he's beating him in these straw polls. There's a point where there's going to be an accounting by Trump. And when Trump decides that he's had enough of DeSantis, that's when that race gets very, very interesting, because who's going to be the fallback?
Well, to my podcast audience, we were cut off there by the weather alert towards the end of the hour. So we'll finish up here. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you all on Monday.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.